Welcome to this Webster Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is troubleshooting common web services problems seen in Webster Application Server. My name is Kathy Kuhn, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide 2. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to the troubleshooting web services in IBM Webster Application Server. Next, our panel of experts will answer the questions that have been previously provided, and then we will open the lines for our live Q&A period. Finally, we will have a summary of today's session. On to slide 3, please. At this time, I would like to pass control over to Michael McGinnis to begin the introduction of our panel. Mike?
Hello, my name is Michael McGinnis. I'm speaking to you today from Durham, North Carolina. I've been an IBM support engineer for about 6.5 years. With areas of expertise in XML problems, web services problems, IO, Java IO connectivity problems. Krishna?
Hi, my name is Krishna Jaladi. I'm an SR level 2 support engineer with an experience of more than 10 years. My areas of expertise includes SDK skills and then J2C transactions, web services, and then schedulers, EJBs, JPA, many more. With this, I will pass control to Alan Alarcon.
Yeah, hi, this is Alan Alarcon. I've been with Level 2 Support for 10 years. Other areas of my specializations are J2C, Web Services, Transaction, XML, and SDK. I'm going to pass on to Hubert.
Hello, my name is Hubert Bush. I've been with Level 2 Support since 2009. I'm currently a team lead for one of the Webster Application Server L2 support teams. I'm a solution developer in Webster Application, a solution developer in web services and a system administrator in Webster Application Server. And I'm very familiar with lots of issues related to HA Manager, DB connections, transactions, and especially web services components.
Well, thank you. Before we go to the question-answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview. Moving on to slide 4. And please go ahead, Michael.
Hello, this is Mike McGinnis again. Today we're going to be covering a number of questions from various different types of web services problems. There are many categories of web services problems. IO connectivity, performance, development problems, and there's quite a big list. So we came up with some of the most common ones that we thought of that we get most questions about. We're going to talk about web service performance problems, things like my web service client application slowed down after an upgrade, or I changed my application and it slowed down, and now the web services are slow. We're going to talk about connectivity problems, IO connections, broken pipes. We're going to talk about IP caching in the web services engine. Another area of performance is JaxB performance when using JaxWS applications, JaxWS being a heavy user of the JaxB technology. We're going to talk about this custom property, WSDL generation extra class path, and this is to help a web services client gather all the library is available to create its WSDL file. The items discussed today will include Windows and Unix platforms. A lot of the IBM code for WebSphere is the same across into the mainframe and iSeries environment, but today we're going to be specifically speaking about the distributed environments for Unix and Windows. Next slide, please. Alan
okay.
Alarcon.
Yes, okay. Thanks, Mike. As Mike said, my specific presentation is about web services performance. Well, we often get PMRs dealing with some small set of individual requests or response that takes longer than expected. These are also often in production environment where you cannot enable web services traces. A big problem that a lot of our customers encounter sometimes is that what's causing the performance problem? Well, so the purpose for the tracing that I'm going to discuss is to isolate the problem to or within web services or outside the web services. The goal for this tracing is to accomplish the smallest number of possible trace points as possible, since it's going to be used in the production. And this trace can be enabled at runtime without reboot. The trace parameters that can be used when trying to identify the objects causing the performance is the COM IBM WS Web Services that trace that WASP perf equal all. Slide 6, please. There could only be two scenarios that we have, either within web services or outside web services. Within web services, there's a client and the server side. The client side is the total time spent in web services processing the request or response. And when you enable that WASP perf equal all, you'll be expecting to see in the trace the line starts showing in the presentation. It's org Apache access 2, which is the calling method, and the return. In between that, you will see the object, or maybe a component from WebSphere, or maybe other product trying to execute the transaction, and it's causing the delay. The same thing on the server side. This will spend some time on the web services side processing the request. Again, it's the same thing as the entry, do post entry, and a do post exit. In between that, that's where you look at where the performance is occurring. And once you identify that, you have to go back and say which component am I going to be enabling. You have to enable a specific trace to find out during the transaction why is it taking so long or why is it taking too much time. Page 7, please, Kathy. The other part of the coin is the outside web services. This is the opposite. You're running the client. The delay is causing by the server or the provider. So you would enable the same thing. You would expect the same line what it says in the presentation. It's the calling and the return method. And in between that, you will identify what's causing the performance. And then it's the same thing, the server side. When you're running the client, the server is not providing enough time for you. I mean, you're expecting this much time and you're not getting that. You use the same tracing and you expect the same line, what shows in the slide. It's the calling and the return. And in between that, you will identify what's the objects causing that. So when you enable this trace, you're not solving what the performance is. You're identifying what object or product is causing the performance. Then you're going to go back and enable a specific to that product or component, why that object is taking much longer. The next presentation is for Krishna.
Slide number 8, please. Yeah. The second question we had come up is how to troubleshoot web services connectivity problems. Slide number 9, please. Okay. So web services connectivity problems includes different scenarios, like from the point you establish a connection to the endpoint where your provider is listening on, to the point where you are able to reuse the connection. So basically, web services for SOAP over HTTP on consumer or the web services client, web services runtime provides a connection pool called outbound connection pool. So basically, the idea of the outbound connection pool is to improve the performance by avoiding the overhead of creating and destroying the connection. So typically, WebSphere consumer runtime creates an HTTP connections and puts them into a pool for reuse. And then this outbound pool is only applicable for the scenario where a client has to make an outbound SOAP request. So typically in a normal scenario, your provider can also be act as a client and make a third-party call. Then in that case, yes, still the provider side also utilizes this outbound pool depending upon what type of scenario you are using. So typically, web services runtime provides two pools, one for JAX RPC and then one pool for JAX AWS-based applications. So outbound pool can be configured through JVM custom properties only. If there are no any JVM properties, the default values will be used to create the pool. So you cannot disable the outbound pool. For performance reasons, we are not allowing a customer to disable outbound pool. But, however, you can disable the reuse of the connection. That means if you have any problems with the persistent connections, then you can disable the reuse of the connections. The default value for this persistent is 5 seconds, that is 5,000 milliseconds. So after which the pool manager will anyway destroy the connections that not used more than 5 seconds. So there is one pool for both JAX RPC and JAX AWS. And then within your runtime, if you have various endpoints using different web services invocation on different target systems, then all of these endpoints will be utilizing the common pool and then of the max connections. Per se, the default max connections is 50. And then if you have three endpoints, then that means these three endpoints will be sharing all these 50 connections depending upon the type of the usage. Slide 10, please. Okay, to answer the questions, how to troubleshoot these connectivity issues. So basic, when you enable the web services common must gather, the first point you will see is when an application requests and web services call to the provider, the first point is it should get a connection from the outbound pool. So the first entry point when you enable the trace is find group and get connection entry, which prints the stats, how many threads are waiting in the waiter queue, and then what is the default connection timeout, and then what is the max connections configured for this pool. So the first line will give you help in identifying when there is a performance in getting a connection. Then you can quickly look at this message and see, okay, how many of the thread threshold is configured, what is my connection timeout, and then what are the pool size that I configured. And the next trace point, AWS3595i, gives an information about the current pool size and the total number of connections in use and the configured pool size. So since this is a first request I had put in the trace, you will see the connection pool size is zero, and then in-use connection size is zero. So the third trace point, AWS3547i, provides you information about the endpoint that it is connecting to. So typically this message is used to quickly find out how many endpoints or how many web services, different types of web services, this particular application server JVM hosts. So based on that, you can quickly determine, okay, I have four endpoints that I need to connect, and then you can start thinking of whether the 50 connections are sufficient for four or three endpoints I'm connecting to, and then quickly determine that you might need to increase the max connection pool size. And then when the connection is allocated to an application, then always the current pool size is incremented and the connections is put in use also incremented. And then with this message, you can always find out how many connections are in use, how many of the connections are created in the pool. So finally, the exit point for before the application gets a connection is find group and get connection exit method. So you can use these trace points and determine the starting timestamp and then ending timestamp, and then you can take the difference of the timestamp to see how much time then the application got the connection before it started invoking the web services request. Okay, slide 11, please.
So the next question is addressing what is IP caching in web services. And IP caching or caching, and we're going to get really specific when we talk about caching in web services. allows, especially, it was introduced for functionality for performance consideration, since creating a new HTTP channel address every single time when getting a new outbound request is quite costly. Slide 12, please. So we first must understand the key components involved in caching web services. And so the first underlining is being able to resolve a host name to their IP address. From a Java perspective, this is taken care of in the java.net inet address cache, what I'll refer to as just net address cache. The inet address cache provides the methods which rely on the operating system to perform the actual resolution. And so the operating system will attempt to resolve the host name by looking up a file, maybe a host file, your DNS server, or any other naming service. It's important to also understand that how the operating system performs the resolution is not in any way controlled by the JVM. The JVM does not directly query any file or DNS server or naming server, and the JVM does not cache the address of any DNS server that might be used in the lookup process. And also, the JVM is not involved in any naming service failover. So, and lastly, and one of the other points too is even when the inet address cache is used, and it might appear to be the only naming server and cache involved, the operating system, and many operating systems do, have their own naming server and cache. How does this impact web services caching? So we can move on to slide 13. So when the OS resolves the hostname to the IP address, the OS results are stored in the inet address cache, and the results can either be successful or unsuccessful. And when the web services engine will check the WS address cache for any existing host or port name. And so this functionality allows the inet address cache default behavior will be determined by the Java version. This is a Java class. And so in WebSphere 7.8.8.5.8.5.5, when Java 2 security is enabled, all successful name resolutions, because remember, when the operating system performs the resolution, if it's successful, then the cache will be stored forever. When Java 2 security is disabled, then the name successful resolutions will only be cached for about 30 seconds. So it's important to know that if we have a failover, or if you're trying to optimize WebSphere performance for web services, we have to configure and review two properties, understanding how the operating system and the inherent inet address cache is going to resolve the host name to an IP address, and understanding how the web services engine is going to use that information on new HTTP outbound requests. And we can move to slide 14 for Krishna.
Question number 4 on slide 14. How to troubleshoot JAXP performance problems in your JAXWS application? This topic is quite challenging and very tedious. We had seen often, many times, it is mostly with the first initial call to the any web services client request. Most of the time, it is the first call that takes most of the time. Once the first call succeeds, then the subsequent calls do much faster compared to the first call. So this topic is much more complex to understand, and then there are many specifications and many layers involved. From the web services perspective, JAXWS engine is involved, and then which relies on JAXB runtime, and then which relies on your VM performance and operating system and the resources available. So let's understand a bit how exactly the JAXP contexts are built and then why they are used. Can we move to slide 15, please? So understanding why JAXP context creation can degrade performance. So basically, most of the times what we noticed is most of the times the JAXP or the web services performance degrade is in the first request. What's happened during your first request is your JAXWS runtime is trying to create a JAXP context object, or on the subsequent request, it tries to find the one existing one and try to reuse. That's the performance gain. During the first time, obviously, you don't have any JAXP context objects created, and then it tries to build one. So there are different approaches the JAXP WS runtime uses to create these JAXP context objects. The first one is it depends on the application packages generated by the tooling, and then tries to use the application packages to build a JAXP context value. And then if this fails, most of the times this should succeed. And then if this succeeds, then the performance in the JAXP or the initial context creation is very low. And then if this fails, the list package method fails, then the next approach would be a find best set method. So when the code flows through find best set method, this is more tedious, and then the things can get slower and slower, because this is the final approach that the JAXP WS engine relies on building any JAXP context object, because it has to do various computations during invocation of this method. One such includes it has to scan through each and every object more closely, depending upon the number of classes are packaged with your application. And then it has to identify and then separate the each class as a primary class, where the JAXP WS runtime suspects, okay, this class might be a JAXP class, let me put it into a primary class list. And then if the JAXP runtime thinks it is not a primary class, then it creates put that class into a secondary list. Then at the end of this class construction, then it again uses those primary lists and then tries to create a JAXP context, which again in turn it depends on the JAXP runtime to create the JAXP context. And then with the list provided to JAXP runtime, for some reason JAXP thinks that no, this is not the, this list is not the valid list, and then again the process continues on the JAXP WS runtime. Tries to again eliminate the sum of the classes from the primary list, put them into the secondary list, and then discard. This process goes on actually until your JAXP context creation is successful. That's the reason when you enable a common web services request, if you find best set in the trace points, and then that clearly tells that yes, so the somehow the code is flowing through find best set method, then if you follow through the trace points in the link that I have given in the next slide, then you will know what techniques that we could avoid to reduce the initial JAXP context creation. There are several techniques WebSphere application server provides to the end users and the application developers to tune and then see which best method suits for their application. So most of the time, we encourage application developers to discover during the development phase, or even if it is skipped during the development phase involving multiple application development teams involved, it is most of the time very difficult. Then one has to catch this in a testing phase, right? So let's move on to slide 16 to find out what options that web services provides. So the first one is most of the time when you use top-down approach, that means when you create your web services artifacts using an WSDL approach, your WS import and XJC tools create an object factory and package info classes. And then this is the one two classes that JAXP WS runtime relies on to build the initial JAXP context. So most of the times when you use this approach, object factory and the package info is already built in, and then the JAXP WS runtime tries to use it. Unfortunately, when the JAXP WS runtime uses package info, and then if application developer puts an unnecessary classes into the package under with the same package name, then the JAXP WS runtime has to scan those through all those classes, depending upon how many jar files and how many classes it has to scan through, and then that is a big performance, because there is no way that JAXP WS runtime know that this is a Zaxby class or non-Zaxby class. It has to scan through those classes to identify some of them, right? So that is always important that for the application developers to determine whenever they are packaging to make sure that the classes they are packaging with the JAX-WS application is really required for the web services. If it is yes, then can they package them as a separate classes which doesn't fall under this package info? That is one approach they can consider. Second one is during the bottom-up approach, WS Gen tool is used, but unfortunately, this tool doesn't generate an object factory class. And then the Zaxby context is created using the class construction. So for this approach, the one possible solution is for the application developers to put a Zaxby and non-Zaxby classes into different packages as suggested, so that the find best set method path will not be executed. And then there are some other techniques depending upon at what layer you are having the performance issue. Let us assume you were in the trace points, you are not finding any find best set method, and then you will see a get all classes from the package. If that is the one which is having the performance issue, then WebSphere provides several JVM custom property. One is persist list, as mentioned in the link that we had given. And then use those options. What that does is when during the first scan through, the JAX-WS runtime gets a list of the classes that it scanned through and then tries to persist those into the disk. When upon the next JVM reboot, then those cache lists will be used so that it will avoid the such operation. That is one option, and there are some other tuning options available, how long you want to persist those classes to the disk, and then how you determine when the runtime should persist those into the disk. There are some threshold parameters available in the link that I had provided. You can use that, and then this document provides a very detailed explanation about how you can reduce the Zaxby context creation times. And there is another new approach. If everything is fails, the new approach is create a Zaxby.index file and put with every package, and then this Zaxby.index has certain rules. If you basically looking for all the classes that the developer thinks they are the Zaxby classes, they can list under this index file, and then the JAX-WS runtime utilizes this Zaxby index and thus avoid such a further unnecessary classes. This is one of the best approach we saw. Many customers took advantage of it and then reduced the initial Zaxby context creation times. With this, let's move to slide 17.
Hi, this is Michael McGinnis. Question 5, slide 17 is, what is the purpose of COM IBM WebSphere Web Services WSDL Generation Extra Class Path Custom Property? Slide 18, please. So the purpose of this custom property is to add or append or include classes, jars, to the class path argument of the WASGen. So WASGen is a command line tool. It's a tool. Its input is basically a list of classes. And its output will be the WSDL and probably schemas as well. So to do that, the WASGen tool needs to know where all of the classes are, all the libraries from your application that make up the application that will actually make up the WSDL. And therefore, once the WSDL is generated, that WSDL defines the web service. Starts with a bunch of annotated classes, and the WSDL will get generated. But sometimes we get some problems, and you'll see these when the application first starts. It won't be at runtime. It'll be at deployment time or at the time the application starts. So if you see the WSWS 7054 WSDL file could not be generated because of the following error. There's lots of ways that this could fail, but one of the ways is you get a class not found or no class def found. if you see that, notice the jar or library that it's looking for. If it's part of your application code, you should know where it is. The WASGen, the WSDL generation program, couldn't find my jar file. How am I going to tell the WASGen command line tool, the one that's called from the web services engine under the covers, well, how am I going to tell this tool where all my jars are? Well, the answer is with this WSDL generation extra class path custom property. So say you get this error. So the first thing you want to do is find the jar with which has the test me class, which has the class that WASGen is complaining about. To add or append the jar's class path to the value of the custom property. Slide 19, please. There's an alternative to the custom property. Package the missing class directly in the same module as the SEI. The SEI class is the service endpoint implementation class. That class has your at web service or at web service provider annotation. So package it in the same module as your service endpoint implementation class, or in a jar in the EJB or WARS lib, right under webinflib or in the EARS lib directory. There we go. Web services runtime will find your classes if they're located within your application, as I just said. You won't need a custom property, so this is an alternative. So the best practice of all this is to include the WSDL with the application. The applications we're talking about are now the web services provider application, not the client applications. This is the web services provider. If in your development time, when you're generating your EAR, exporting your EAR from your development environment, there may be an option to include the WSDL with your application. That is the IBM best practice. Provide a reference to the WSDL file with the WSDL location attribute of the at web service annotation. By specifying the predefined WSDL and keeping it included with your EAR, performance is improved. So it's simply improved because the web services runtime, when the application first starts or when it gets deployed, it examines it. Web service runtime looks through and says, okay, I have a WSDL. I don't even need to run WSGen. I could just skip to the next part. We're all ready to go. There's an example at the bottom of an at web service annotation with the WSDL location attribute specified. And that is just the most commonplace where you can put that relative reference to webinflib WSDL. That should be included. The last thing I want to talk about is to post some links to documentation where you can read about this yourself. The first link is to the Information Center, and that's about generating Java artifacts for JaxxWS applications from a WSDL file. Second piece of IBM document that is relevant to our discussion about the WSDL generation extra class path is IBM product documentation called WSGen command for JaxxWS applications. This goes into detail about what's going on under the covers during WSDL generation or WASGen. Best practices are included. So can we have slide 19, please? Slide 20, please. Thank you. And for question 6, we'll have Krishna Jalati.
Yep. Thank you. This is a question we got from one of our customers. So the question reads as, what are some of the tips to reduce or minimize connection latency in troubleshooting web services problems? I know it is a loaded question. However, any rules of thumb ideas are welcome. We try to get much details, but in day-to-day busy world, sometimes we have our own priorities to respond. So with the assumption that what we understand, we had an internal debate, and then we come up with the answer to these questions. So the connection latency can be related to several layers. So assuming this is the web services outbound pool connection latency, so the WebSphere solution is to provide an outbound pool. So the initial connection always have a latency because it has to go through several layers, as previously one of my colleague Hobart suggested, because this could be required in multiple layers to resolve the host and the port, and then once the connection is created, and then that connection can be reused with the outbound pool concept. And then as long as you are using persistent connection, then within the 5 seconds, if you have another request to the same endpoint, that the same persistent connection can be reused. That is the one solution we had. And the second one is, so there is an default socket timeout, which is an 3 minutes by default. Before a web services runtime tries to establish a connection to an endpoint, how long it should wait? It will wait for 3 minutes. If it doesn't able to establish a connection to the endpoint, then it will throw a socket timeout exception. So those three timeouts, the 3 minutes, will give you an idea whether the WebSphere runtime is able to establish a connection to the endpoint or not. And then the reasons could be several, as we said. It could be DNS problems. It could be host name resolution problems. Depending upon, if you see a socket timeout exception, then that clearly tells that the web services client is not able to connect to the target address. So it is not able to create an HTTP connection. So the service provider side looks for latency on the web server security layer and then the WAS JVM. So on the provider side, the latencies can be related to different layers, normal like HTTP or HTTPS. So if you are using HTTPS, definitely there could be some challenges before client and server trust each other, and then before they mutually agree upon with all type of authentication used, and then once the connection is established, and then the performance should be good, fairly good. But all we are trying to do is the initial time that is required to create a connection to an endpoint is very important. And then we must understand at what layer it is having the much time is being spent. Either it could be creating a connection, let us say on the client side, if it is able to successfully resolve the host name fast enough, but then the second layer, if you are using HTTPS, then there could be that it is doing an handshake, handshake between the client and server. Then if it is that is taking long time because of several SSL layer problems, and then that is also the one approach that we can investigate. So there is another third layer called security layer, depending upon how what authentication authorization levels are used. And then that could also have some latency in there within the WAS JVMs.
Yeah, and also, too, I'd like to add, Krishna, there might be a load balancer in between. So you could have maybe between the client and the provider another load balancer or some type of hop. I think we outlined it here in the web server as an example. So to try to minimize or troubleshoot where the latency could be occurring, removing anything that the client has to hop through to get to the provider may try to isolate the issue. Having a straight connect, even if it's outside of the production environment, in a QA or development environment, could help identify if something outside of WebSphere is occurring or causing the latency on the connection.
Okay. With this, I will pass the control back to Kathy.
I'd like to thank the entire panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. And now we're going to move on to the live question and answer session.
Okay, and our first question comes from Satish.
Actually, I want to know the JAX RPC, right? JAX WS and RPC. How is this different from the SOAP calls? Because we have two web services running. JAX and SOAP access web services. So can we implement both the web services in a single environment?
Hi, this is Mike McGinnis. Are you talking about a client side or a server?
On the server side.
Yes, it's just two separate applications running in WebSphere. Sure you can.
Okay. So because what is happening is when we do the SOAP access web services, right, we need to configure few of the jars from the SOAP access. So how does that take precedence? Like I know JAX RPC calls are or JAX WS calls are a native WebSphere calls, so you don't need any configuration. But will that affect the performance wise if we have two web services in the same session, same environment? My question is, if the JAX and SOAP are on the same environment, right?
Okay.
So will that affect anything with performance, or is there any tuning that needs to be changed?
Okay. This is Krishna. So what my understanding is that, so your question is, you have Apache access in the sense, are you referring to a third-party web service provider that packages with the application that runs within the WebSphere?
Yeah, Apache Access Service.
Okay. So in typically the JAX WS engine provided by WebSphere is based on Access 2. So the typical JAX WS engine in WebSphere uses its own transport. Okay. So the it will not use the transport layer provided by the Access 2 itself. So when you are using Access engine, I would assume you are referring to it as an old style access engine, SOAP access engine, right? So the old style or any access to engine, even if you want to use with the WebSphere, you could use definitely. In that case, the performance depends on how good your third party web service runtime is. Definitely. From the application server JAX WS runtime, we have the trace point that we can investigate and provide you the where we see the performance. But unfortunately, when you are using third-party runtime, we don't have those capabilities because we don't know what trace points in there. And then, moreover, you are not using our transport layer. So then the other disadvantage is even if you want to use any of the your security policies or HTTP policies, that is not possible. But to answer your question, from the performance perspective, we shouldn't see any different because we consider a third-party JAX, third-party web services runtime is another application that runs within the WebSphere. So theoretically, you should not see any performance difference. But it is possible there could be some class conflicts that might exist, but that depends on what classes that are involved with the conflict. Usually we work through with the customers with the PMRs and then help them to avoid those class conflicts. And then we do have two developer articles using third-party web services engine with the web services. And then that developer articles provides the step-by-step configuration required to configure your third-party web services runtime. Hope this addresses your question.
Yeah. Thanks, Krishna. Can you please post us that third-party, how to configure that, because just we have some issue going on.
Yeah, so sure. We'll post that in group chat in a moment.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Matt.
Hi, guys. I was just wondering, is there a minimal trace string to just output the SOAP envelope, like request and responses? If I recall correctly, the MuskGather does print out some stuff, but the formatting is pretty bad. I was wondering if there's a trace string that can
Yeah, there is. Let me look it up for you. This is Mike McGinnis. Yes,
okay,
it is,
Mike.
Excellent question.
That's all I have. If you just want to post it to the chat, I'll get it.
Right. It's a good question because in web services, the whole engine and communications and JaxB bindings and XML bindings, parsing, I mean, all of that is getting logged. So there's a lot of questions like this. It's a good question. It's a common question, you know, because we have a focus area, for example, connectivity or just messaging. So we do have a few extra trace strings.
So these are the trace strings you would use, and this would just show purely the south. So outbound and inbound connection.
Great. Thanks.
So message user.
So the next question is, the slide 10 shows a trace view of the connection pulling. How do you enable that trace?
Okay. So typically, the answer to your question is depending upon if you are using JAX RPC or JAX WS, it is possible to enable only lightweight trace that only prints this pooling information. We will try to post it in the group chat, the trace string. Then with that trace string, you can use this when you enable this lightweight trace, then you can use this trace points. You will see the trace points with the lightweight trace.
Yeah, and it's the generic trace string off of our web services MustGather as well, on our MustGather page.
The next question is, if a target web service has multiple methods, it is advisable to enable timeouts from the application rather than use a WebSphere timeout like com.ibmwebsphere.webservices.http.socket timeout.
Hi, this is Mike McGinnis. It depends on what you want to do with your web service provider with your multiple methods. If you would like to have different methods wait longer. Let me ask you a question. Is this a read timeout? Yes, read timeout. So if you have multiple methods, and if they're all going to the same web service provider, you may have some foreknowledge about, well, method X takes normally 10 seconds. If it takes 30 seconds, then I know that's an error. I don't want to wait any faster than that. Method Y, you could have a different set of criteria. It's you know, doing some more work. I'm willing to wait 45 seconds, but not more than 2 minutes, say. So, yeah, with a policy set, you can configure at a very fine level down to the method what your read timeout should be. Other ways to set the read timeout that would meet your requirements, you could put it in code. If you're in a piece of code that you know that when you send out this request via the port proxy class, you only want to wait at most 30 seconds, just for example. You could put it in your code. So there's other two ways of setting the read timeout for a web services client application are through a JVM custom property, and then the last one is just take the default. In your case, these won't work because the custom property and just the default would apply to the entire JVM.
The next question is, what is concept of ellipse in WAS?
This is Krishna. This question is definitely something that not related to web services. But however, Kathy, if we can take the email address of the user, then probably we will be able to provide the information he requested in a separate session outside of this conference.
Is from Mohab.
How you configure the default web service security policy set, including service provider binding to perform a request authentication using signed X509 certificates, and then is there a decent tutorial article on developer works, perhaps? And so this all relates to what Mike McGinnis has talked about earlier, which is configuring a policy set or bindings using our policy sets for JAX WS application. This is a very detailed question, and we can probably have a whole presentation talking about X509 certificates and how you configure WS security policy sets related to that. But you would, again, use the policy sets, and then you can go into message-level security and all these different things. I do have a presentation that goes through how you configure service-level service provider bindings and vice versa client bindings for X509. So, again, Kathy, I would suggest we get Mohab's email address, and I can work with him to discuss that further.
Hi, this is Mike McGinnis. The IBM Knowledge Center does contain a very good article. It's really a tutorial,
yeah.
Step-by-step instructions. I've gone through it a few times. It's very easy to make a mistake because it is very detailed. Web services security problems are very challenging because there's so many different possibilities of combinations to configure these things, and different possibilities. You can sign and encrypt at the same time, and, oh, by the way, send a Kerberos token along for the ride. I posted in the chat a link to our IBM Knowledge Center, configuring a policy set for bindings for XML digital signature with client and provider application-specific bindings. The prerequisites of this are really nothing. Just have an installation of WebSphere application server. You can use the WebSphere provided samples. I've done it with my own code. I had a provider and a client work together, so I just put security on those, and I followed the procedures. It does work. You'll get very familiar with this. It's a great tutorial, and that's about all I have on that topic. Joe, any follow-up questions on the WS security? Or Krishna has a comment.
No. Actually, I have posted some of yours.
Yeah, we'll post some more for your own. But also, just to go back to, in this presentation, that Mike, the link to the Info Center that Mike posted, also, there's under in that same topic, it talks about how you can enable both digital signature and also XML encryption as well. So it's pretty in-depth about if you need a tutorial about how to do this.
I think once you go through this tutorial and you get a sample application to work, then you get a light bulb moment. You really can say, this is really pretty easy. I just got to point my configuration to my key store and trust store on both sides, exchange some certs, and you're really good to go.
Yeah, and again, these can all be configured since you're using policy sets. You can combine them into one, so you can have username token with XML digital signature with XML encryption as well. So you can, even though these presentations or this section of the Info Center goes through individual ones, they can be combined using the policy set bindings to make a more secure web service environment.
Next question is, what is the purpose of org.eclipse.star in the plugin directory?
Yeah, I'll take that question. So that directory, it could be related to most of our web services classes start with Org Apache or Org Apache Access 2. Those classes are more related to WebSphere and not specifically related to web services. But if I looked at that directory in those classes, and you know, if we want to go into more detail about it, we can. But they're not specifically related to web services.
Yes, I have one last question coming from David. Sir, your line is open.
Okay. Yeah, this is David. I have a question about HTTP inbound requests. And the first question is, sometimes we get 504 and could be returned from the WebSphere. And is there any minimum trace I can turn on to find out what caused the timeout? Then the second question is related to this also. Is sometimes I have a hard time to find the source IP address of the HTTP request. Is there a minimum trace I can turn on to find out who is sending this HTTP request?
Hi, this is Mike McGinnis. I think I can look for that trace string. It's a minimum trace string. It's the method trace that you put in, plus there's two others. Give me a minute to search for that.
Yeah.
And can you please ask the first part of your question again?
The first question is the 504. We got HTTP 504 at front end, and we don't know if that is a return. 504 is returned from the WebSphere or is it from the intermediate layer.
Right.
So if it is coming from a WebSphere, is there any trace we can turn on to determine what caused the timeout?
Yeah. You would turn the trace on the WebSphere application server trace on the web service provider side to see if it's the application itself that through some exception that caused the 504. You're right, it could be some other layer that didn't like it and threw the 504. But definitely looking at the server side is the way to troubleshoot the 504. Now, you also mentioned timeout. Is it a timeout problem or is it a 504 problem?
Also, they have some timeout at the front end, and we don't know which layer caused the timeout.
So you see it from the web services client, or do you see it from farther back?
From the client.
So the web services client receives a timeout.
Oh, I mean, when I say client, so I mean that we have like F5 the driver to drive the HTTP traffic to test the back-end WebSphere. and do the stress test, and they get a timeout.
So that, yeah, so it sounds like in your case, WebSphere, for whatever reason, maybe going too slow or throwing an exception.
That's right.
In that case, I would recommend putting a trace on the web services provider side to repeat the problem with a case where you get the 504, and we would just have to analyze that trace. A lot of different things could be happening.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you have any other follow-up on that question?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's all my questions. Thanks.
Thank you.
Is there a default policy set, and where to define the new one?
Yeah, basically, WebSphere ships default policy sets. They are what we call them as only read-only. That means you cannot edit the default policy sets. A default policy sets provides you a quick way of creating or customizing the policy sets. Yeah, definitely policy set administration, either using wsadmin commands or using admin console will allow you to customize the policy set, provided you have to make a copy of the default policy sets and bindings and name your own customized name. And then once you copy that, that the copied policy sets and bindings are editable and then they are customizable. So basically the default policy sets provides you a proof of concept. Okay, this is the WS policy set. I want to use this. And then each policy set has its own different policies that are supported based on the requirement. But end user can go through the admin console navigation panel and then click on to the each default policy set in the admin console, which gives you what policies that particular default policy set supports. And then with that information, you can determine whether that policy sets and bindings are suitable for your requirement. Hope this answers your question.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that, too. It's you can also create your own policy sets, but we obviously recommend that you use the default policy sets when applying them to your application. And you can use any combination of the default policy sets, as Christian mentioned, to make a more unique environment that you need for your application, whatever the business requirements are.
The next question is, if we increase the thread pools in WebSphere, does the response of the web service increase?
So typically this is my understanding. If you are referring to a thread pool in the sense you are, I would assume you are referring to the outbound pool connection. So it depends. It depends on there is no direct relation. Increasing the max connection pool size would increase the response. Basically, as long as you see using the trace points, if your web services pool is running out of connections, then increasing the max connection pool size might help in this case, because now you are allowing web services runtime to create more persistent connections into the pool, right? If you are not seeing that your pool is reaching to its capacity, and then, or if you're not seeing any threads that are waiting in a waiter queue, then we don't think the increasing the max connection pool size would help.
Yeah, I think in addition to that, this is Alan, the thread pool is being used during the response. So if there's no thread pool to use, obviously there's not going to be a response that's going to be provided back and forth.
How do we do capacity planning for async WebSphere in the sense of thread pools versus connection pool?
No, actually, the async web services client invocation model is a bit different. The outbound pool that we talked about is basically for a synchronous response. That means, or it could be a one-way, SOAP over HTTP. So basically, they are all synced. That means web service consumer will send a SOAP request and then wait for the response on the same thread, right? And then similarly, a web service client can just send a message and then just get out of the without waiting for a response in case of one-way request. But in async client model, it will not use the default outbound pool connection. Rather, it uses a different algorithm. So the capacity planning, to answer your question regards to the capacity planning, this definitely will have to be determined either by the load test, but definitely there are some info center links available to tune the different timeouts for the async outbound pool. That would give you an idea then what values you would want to go with. But there are no general guidelines available to do a capacity planning, but one has to do with depending upon the application, because it depends on the application design and then where your provider exists. Yeah, and also we have an info center link. We'll provide it into the group chat.
And then one thing, an additional tool that's shipped with WebSphere is PMI, and using request metrics when you start to plan performance, especially related to asynchronous calls or synchronous calls, is enabling different request metrics for the web services component that can help isolate any performance issues that can occur. That's another link that we'll send as well.
The next one. If we have 50 web service requests, REST or SOAP, in applications, how do we find out which service is killing the performance of the application? If one service is creating problems, does it impact the remaining services' response time as well?
Okay, I take that. This is Alan. You said 50 web services or 50 requests from one web services?
The question is, if we have 50 web services requests.
Yeah, because at the bottom it says how to find out which service is killing the performance of the application if one service is creating problem. Enabling the trace that I mentioned earlier should be able to narrow down the performance that's having problem. If this is 50 web services, then it's a little bit harder, but if there's only one web service coming from 50 requests, then that would be easier to do. Using the same trace string can pinpoint which one is causing the delay. Do I get the question correct here? There's 50 web services or 50 requests from one web service?
I'm going to ask Reddy to put that in the group chat. She says we have different web services.
Oh, you have different web services. From my experience, I've never actually had an experience of having 50 web services and trying to pinpoint which one is causing from what web services. Again, we still can use the same trace string and work from there. I know it's a lot. It's a lot of services, a lot of trace that you're going to be reading in the trace log. But maybe it will help to find out when it occurred. Then that's when you go and look into the trace that you're going to enable and say it occurred from here around this time, and then you try to find out from there. There is no, I guess, a trick to look which web services, but for now there's just so many of them running at that time, then if you just try to identify the specific time, then you probably be able to narrow it down at that trace, because it's going to be a huge trace that comes out, and then you're going to dig into a specific one, the time, and then you're going to go and dig into the trace strings that you're going to be looking, which one is causing the delay.
Hi, this is Mike. I think I could add some to it. The WS perf trace that Alan talked about briefly, that would help. I don't really understand the question. I don't know. It says we have 50 web services requests. I guess those are outbound into another web service or different web services providers. How can we find out which service is killing the performance
of the application?
So if you want to try to, you can measure the performance from the client side. And if you have the trace, you can put it into the IBM Trace and Request Analyzer tool and find out the slowest parts. You can find the time gaps, which service is responding slowest to my outbound request. You'll find the slow ones, and you should be able to identify that service from the client side. You can also do a similar thing from the service provider side, but if the service provider itself is slow, if you know that already, the performance trace, you've already passed the point that you need the performance trace. You don't want to just measure. You want to look at the performance. You want to put the full trace on them. If you found the server that you know is slow, then you want to put the full web services trace on so we can get details.
Yeah, and also to add, if it is a particular service that you are trying to identify with the mix of different web service requests, yeah, there is also another option when you run the WS perf trace and also web services transport layer trace. The web services transport layer trace prints a summary of the number of requests and the number of services that are taking time. And then with that messages, definitely you can identify a particular service that is having performance problems. Yeah, I happened to do this, I think, a couple of weeks back. With this trace, we were able to direct one of the customer and pointed them out to a problematic service, and they disabled it, and then they isolated the problem, double confirmed that the performance is related to that service. So if you're looking for some that kind of information, yeah, definitely, as my colleague said, WS perf trace along with the transport layer trace would give you a summary of the service request and the endpoint information that is having a problem.
Yep. And another point I'd like to add to that as well is we start to pull back, unravel this onion. I posted there some web services counters that I was speaking about earlier, and it relates strongly to this latest question, whereas you can enable different counters per the web service. So if you want to see the number of requests that service dispatch or the average time of a response from a provider, we can enable counters in PMI to track that. So you can help identify which service per every web service is causing the problem. Now, you don't want to go on and enable all these statistics because then all the statistics enabled in themselves will cause a performance problem. So you don't want to do that. But you want to definitely review the chart that I posted here and determine which counters would be applicable to you to determining where the performance may lie. And if we take one higher step up, the performance problem might be related to something outside of web services. And I think the performance data, be it a high CPU must gather or any of the performance data, can help identify something else. Because we see lots of application might be very complex. The web service might call an EJB that initiates a transaction, what have you. And the issue might not be the web services. It might be the web services response can't. It's not as quickly because of some other back-end process. And that's what the performance data will help identify, along with narrowing it down with the performance counters.
There is one more question in the chat. For JAX WS HTTP transport custom properties for web service applications, and he provided a link from a knowledge center. This link talks about read timeout properties. Timeout, and it's not qualified, and this says that it can be set as a JVM customer property.
Right.
And also talks about HTTPS transport policies. I'm interested in that one.
Yeah, sure. This is Krishna. I will take that question. So basically the link that provided in the HTTP transport custom properties for web services, it is a common link for both JAX WS and JAX RPC related web services. Usually when we say read timeout, the read timeout, there are two types of read timeout, one for JAX RPC and then one for JAX WS application. So the timeout without any qualified name is applicable for your JAX WS application. And then the read timeout with com.ibm.ws.webservices.readtimeout, that is applicable for JAX RPC-based applications. So these two you can set as a JVM custom properties. In case of JAX RPC, you can set these timeouts in deployment descriptors, because JAX RPC-based web service implementation depends on the deployment descriptors. And then if you are using JAX WS-based application, you can attach an HTTP policy set, and then you can configure these timeouts through a policy set are both models allows you to override these timeouts on an API call on the stub or the bindings. Hope this clarifies your question. And then the other timeout, there is one more timeout. I see HTTP inbound persistent read timeout. That is only applicable in case of async web services invocation model.
Write timeout.
The write timeout, similarly, the write timeout is applicable for JAX WS application. Similarly, there is one property available for your JAX RPC-based application also.
Right.
So basically, anything to do with the com.dot, IBM.dot, WS.dot, web services.dot, and the property name, mostly it belongs to an JAX RPC-based web services. And then if you see a package name com.dot, IBM.dot, WS.dot, web svcs.dot, and a property that is applicable to JAX WS, if you don't see any qualifier like as we see in like read timeout, just timeout and write timeout, they are applicable for JAX WS based applications. And there was a tech note published to clarifying this difference. Yes.
There are no other questions in queue at this time.
In summary, we started to scratch the surface of this highly used and very complex web application server component. We covered web services performance, connectivity related to just socket timeout exceptions and how about troubleshooting those, related to IP caching and web services caching, JAXP performance problems, and really a troubleshooting of how you can avoid deployment and startup issues by ensuring that the web services engine is configured properly. And, of course, best practices related to Wizzle deployment and Wizzle use. The question spans a whole host of areas related to policy sets, security, and more connectivity questions and tracing, along with PMI metrics. So I hope you use this information to help isolate where an issue could occur on the client or provider. Try to discover issues before we get to production environments or staging and development. And also a key point that we try to do in level 2 support is isolating the problem, be it making sure that there's a direct connection between the web services client and the provider, removing maybe a web server or a load balancer. Since web services has a development component via IDE such as Rational or WebSphere development tools, removing that from the equation of a problem can really help isolate if it's a problem with the development or a problem with the actual web services code. And with those tips, I think we're ready to move over to the end of the presentation, Kathy.
Well, thank you, Hobart, for this summary. At this time, we'd like to conclude the Ask the Expert session. Thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you, Alan, Hobart, Krishna, and Michael, for a great presentation. Everyone have a great day.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.